You are listening to the BC Lions Den Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
To the right side, play action fake to Brown, Lule on a roll, downfield wide open, it's the record for G. Roy Simon. He has caught Milt, and Simon says he's the all-time CFL pass receiving leader. At the four-yard line, 4 yards separating McManus and the Lions from a trip to the Grey Cup. Doesn't get better than this. McManus, end zone, touchdown Lions! BC's going to the Grey Cup!
What's going on, CFL fans? Welcome to episode 141 of the BC Lions Den.ca podcast, brought to you by Metal Rocks, original handmade, one-of-a-kind jewelry made right here in BC. Check out their link on our website, bclionsden.ca, and see all the great custom pieces they have to offer. I'm your host, Brian Warishan, and I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. The BC Lions won a football game, which means we have some fun stuff to talk about this week. It's been a long season, but the Lions finally rewarded the diehards at BC Place with a win at home, and there are some good signs with this team right now, and maybe, just maybe, they're starting to turn the corner. Last week's win came at the expense of the Ottawa Redblacks, and they'll be the opponent again this week as the Lions travel to our nation's capital in search of sweeping the two-game series. So we're doubling up with both Michaela Schreider, co-host of the Mouchoir podcast, and Rod Villagomez, host of the Wood Cookie Sawcast, both shows covering the Redblacks in the Canadian Football Podcast Network. But Mojo, work took me out, sickness took you out last week, but we're back. How you feeling, my man?
Hey, everybody. Thanks for downloading the show. Hey, Brian, I am feeling good, my man. I've been feeling better than I have in a while. You know, sometimes, man, cancer, it just keeps the side effects just keep on giving. But hopefully that's behind me now. And Brian, you know what? Excited to talk about a win for a change.
Yeah. How does it feel to be sitting down to do a show after a Lions win? It's been a long time for sure.
It almost feels like a Grey Cup win, almost.
At this point in the season, everything we get is a bonus, right?
But, you know, unfortunately for the Lions, they keep sending me surveys to ask about my satisfaction, man, and I keep telling them the truth.
Well, at least you went home a little happier last week. Let's get into it. Finally, fans of BC Place get to go home happy after a 29-5 victory over the Redblacks last week. All three phases of the Lions game were clicking, but really Ottawa is struggling of late, so we have to add a little grain of salt to this win. But hey, the Lions needed a win, and the way they won may just give this team some confidence to go finish the season strong.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, we all know the playoffs are out of line for the Lions, and you know they got nothing left to play for now but pride and jobs for next season. And it maybe the message is finally getting home. I don't know. It's like, you know, it boggles the mind, Brian, where was this, you know, 6-7 weeks ago?
Yeah, I think where was it earlier in the season? Well, I think there was a lot of changes on the team, not only on the roster, but with the coaching staff. So, you know, we kind of thought things were going to take some time to gel. We didn't think it was going to be 11 games into the season. But again, this is Ottawa, and they're a pretty banged up football team right now. And you know, they're not playing their best football either. They've lost 5 in a row. So we'll see what happens this week when they go to Ottawa, because that'll be the real test if they can continue on this or return back to their old ways. And if they return back to their old ways, they're kind of back to square one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this win means nothing if you get if you crap the bed this week.
We finally saw what Mike Riley can do when he gets protection, and he wasn't sacked once last week. He had a couple of interceptions that I'm sure he would like back, but Riley looked solid, going 20 of 29 for 284 yards and two touchdown passes. We also saw him use his feet for another 31 yards on four carries. Mojo, great to see Mike finally have a performance like that, because he deserves it after the way he's been pounded this year. And on that big run that he had, he even, you know, gave a wicked head fake to the linebacker in open field and, got a big gain on the play. So it was great to see Mike have some success.
We all knew that he could do this. This isn't a surprise, right? It's a surprise that we haven't been able to see it until now.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. When we talk to Mike, every time we've talked to him, he's been really cool, really great guy. I saw a clip this earlier, maybe it was earlier this week or at the end of last week. He didn't seem to be so cool with our good friend Matt Baker the other day.
Oh, that's all in fun.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they got a little thing going. There was another post-game press conference that he did, and Matt Baker actually called the game in BC Place. He was giving the updates about the plays and stuff in place with the regular announcer, and Mike was giving him a hard time afterwards, saying, "Oh, I heard you say something stupid out there. Like a small gain. It was 2 yards. Come on."
Okay, good.
So, yeah, they're just playing around with each other.
Because that's good to know. Because I really had, you know, high respect for Mike Riley in our dealings with him. He was one of the best interviews we've done, I think, in the history of the show. And Matt Baker, whenever I've had a chance to talk with him, has always been really cool to me. And really, really concerned about my health and happy that I've won the battles that I have. So I guess I was feeling a little protective of my buddy Matt.
No, it's all good there. The running game powered by Brandon Rutley was also strong. Rutley averaged 5.5 yards on 20 carries for 111 yards. With John White sidelined by injury, Rutley has really taken charge of that position and has provided the Lions with solid work the last few games. I really love Rutley's game, Mojo. He's a no-nonsense, run-you-over type of back, and it's fun to watch him play when he gets going.
I've always loved those kind of running backs. Barry Sanders being maybe the exception, but I've always been the power back, run-you-over, Earl Campbell type of guy.
Marshawn Lynch.
I love that type of running.
Yeah, it gets you fired up, right? When guys, he's not the biggest guy either, but he's built and he's stocky, and he can knock you over if your feet aren't set. He's gonna run right through you. So, I love that type of back as well. So it's great to see the Lions having success with the running game. Of course, none of that happens without the improved play on the offensive line. And Kelly Bates has quickly put his mark on this team, taking the unit back to the basics of techniques taught to him by offensive line guru Dan D'Orazio. In just a few short weeks at the helm, Bates has made an impact. That is an encouraging sign. Of note, however, is both improved performances have come against struggling teams that are struggling to get to the quarterback in Montreal and Ottawa. It'll be interesting to see how they do when they face a team like Edmonton near the end of the season in a couple weeks here, or even Toronto in the coming weeks. But progress is progress. And Mojo, there was a story of, I can't remember if it was on the radio or in the paper that I read it. There was a moment in practice where Kelly Bates stopped a drill and had a lineman move his foot over 6 inches. So, that's the kind of attention to detail that Kelly Bates is bringing to the table. And we all know how thorough Dan D'Orazio was as well. So kudos to him. We're seeing some progress there, and hopefully that continues.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that this – a guy could come in that quick and make such a big turnaround. Great to see. It makes you wonder what Brian Chu is doing that the other guys that the line just couldn't get, or what he wasn't doing. I don't know. I mean, everything I've heard is the man's a good coach, but maybe it was just a circumstance this time didn't work out for him, and hopefully he lands on his feet somewhere. But you can't argue with the results that Kelly Bates is getting.
Yeah, and sometimes it's a matter of the players waking up too, right? When your coach gets fired, who's next? You know, it's you, the player. You can't fire coaches forever. So these guys realize that, hey, we just got our coach fired. We better pick up our game here. Sometimes it's just the message too, the way guys have of delivering a message. Maybe Kelly Bates is a better teacher. I'm sure Brian Chu knows the game inside and out, knows the position inside out. But, you know, sometimes it's the way you get your message across. And maybe Kelly Bates is having a little more success than Brian Chu was. While the Lions have struggled all season, Brian Burnham has not. And he's having an all-star season just like every year and is 57 yards away from another 1,000-yard season. Sitting third in the league in receiving yards, he's one constant that Mike Riley has at his disposal. And he had a great game last week. He didn't find the end zone, but he made several catches to extend drives and finished with 95 yards on 9 receptions. And that's over 10 yards of reception, Mojo.
You know, Brian Burnham, as we've come to know, Brian, a consummate professional. You know he's going to have a great season. He would have a great season if you and I were throwing him the ball.
Yeah, I don't know. I threw a football the other day and it wasn't too pretty. it's been a long time since I've chucked a football around and I was having a hard time getting a spiral. So I don't know about that. But yeah, I mean, obviously he's the best player on the BC Lions right now. You know, you throw Mike Riley, but as far as receivers or anybody contributing to that offense right now, Brian Burnham is the man, and certainly having another great year. Not only did the Lions fans get to see a win, but they also saw the first touchdown of the season by Daron Carter. Carter has been the whipping boy for many Lions fans and especially fans from other teams this season. He's been accused of being a cancer by outsiders and as a player who has quit on the team. But that catch he made for that TD proved otherwise, because that likely would have been an interception, Mojo, and he went up and took it away, taking a pretty good hit in the process. So that was great to see, and hopefully we'll see more of that from Daron Carter.
Been waiting for it, man. I've been waiting for this guy to come out. You know, we've got our signs up. I don't know if you saw him, Section 210, Carter Country, man. And we've been waiting for it, and I'm still on your side, Daron. I know you can still pull out a good season, bro. So come on, let's finish strong, man. We need to finish strong. Let's base it, man. Daron Carter, he may not be with the Lions next year, but if he wants to be anywhere in the CFL next year, he needs to finish strong, or nobody's going to give this guy another shot.
Another receiver that had a strong game was Javon Katoy, and this is a kid that came to the Lions straight from the Langley Rams of the BC Junior Football League. He impressed in training camp and made the roster. He hasn't seen the ball much and has been asked to provide, you know, support in a more of a blocking role for much of the season. But this kid has size and talent, and I think he's going to be a good one. He finished the night with three receptions for 68 yards. We should also mention that Lamar Durant, who after a few silent games had 87 yards on the night and a big touchdown catch. Shaq Johnson, who of course I took in fantasy last week, was held off the board and only had one target thrown his way, and that happened to be picked off. So, but a good night for the Lions receivers overall. And you know, we were asking the question before, what's wrong with the Lions receivers? Well, same thing that was wrong with Mike Riley. Mike Riley gets some time to find his guys out there, and he'll have success. And that was the game plan coming into the season, and that's this game here, and maybe the Calgary game where they lost late in the game are pretty much the only times we've seen that this year.
Yeah, I've been watching Katoy all season long, and I think, like you said, man, this guy's going to be a gem. Maybe not this year, next year for sure. You watch, this guy's going to take off. Enjoy him while we got him, folks.
Yeah,
This guy's got NFL size.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say that he's a specimen, and he's only getting started. So it'll be exciting to see what he can do next year. Defensively, the Lions were solid last week, thanks in large part to largely ineffective Jonathan Jennings. Thank you, Jonathan. And Red Blacks offense, it only seemed to have Dominic Rhymes as any real threat. However, let's throw some praise here. And since Sean Lemon arrived back in the BC, the defense has been a lot better, which is no surprise. Lemon was the defensive player of the game for the Lions last week, and his presence on the defensive line has helped the whole defense. With pressure on the QB comes hurried throws, comes better coverage of receivers, and it also allows the DBs to jump routes as well. Lions were able to pick a couple off on Jennings last week. Former Red Blacks D lineman Jonathan Newsom also had a strong game for the Lions against his former club. You know, Sean Lemon, I can't figure the guy out, Mojo. He can't seem to find a home in this league, you know, a permanent home, but wherever he goes, he produces. And I'm glad he's back with the Lions, because he certainly helped out.
Yeah, things have definitely turned around since he's been back, that's for sure. You know, Brian, we don't know what goes on, right, behind closed doors and stuff, and you can only speculate as an outsider why a guy with this much talent that has this kind of effect wherever he goes can't find a home. You know, I don't want to speculate on what it might be. There's got to be something. And, you know, Jonathan Jennings, he was who we thought he was. And maybe this is one of the few things that Herbie's gotten right.
Yeah, I really don't know if Jonathan's ever going to find his game again. And I think that shoulder injury that he took, I was listening to Travis Lulay on the post-game show coming home from the game the other night. And he was asked about Jonathan Jennings and what's happened to his career. And he said that, you know, after Jonathan injured his shoulder, after his good season there, he had to change his whole throwing mechanic, and he's never really been the same player since. And I think maybe that's gotten into his head a little bit. To me, he seems like a lot of this is mental. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to get rid of those demons in your head and you're fighting your game all the time. I think when Jonathan first came on the scene, he just went out and chucked the football around, you know, and I don't think he's doing that. I think he's overthinking the game a bit, and I'm not sure he's ever going to get it back. And certainly in Ottawa right now, it's not a great situation for him.
No, it doesn't look like it, and that's too bad. I mean, he's a nice guy, and of course, we want all the players in the CFL to do well, just not when they're playing BC. And hopefully this guy can find it. I mean, it's hard to see, you know, how something can just go that fast. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I trust Travis. Travis Lulay would know way more about this stuff than we would. So if he's saying it's mechanics and the guy's having a hard time, then I'm going to go with what Travis has to say. But it's definitely in his head as well.
Yeah, I don't know if he indicated that's what it was. He just said that, you know, after that injury, he had to kind of change the way he threw the ball. And he kind of struggled with it a little bit. And then who knows, maybe he's worked all that out. But I do think there's a mental side of the game to it as well.
Like it seems to me like he just, you know, he's trying to be almost too precise, right?
Yeah.
And he's not like that one 5,000 yard season, man, he was throwing it up there, right? And trusting his receivers to go get the ball and stuff. And it, I don't know if maybe that's, you know, part of it's that, you know, getting picked off three times in that first game back, you know, he's never bounced back, it seems.
Yeah, he's still got a good arm too. It's just the decision making isn't there. So it's unfortunate, but we're thankful that we got to get a win against him anyway. And it certainly helped out our cause to get us back on the right track. It was the first time this season that the Lions have played well in all three phases of the game, and now the challenge will be to follow it up in Ottawa. Mike Riley said he was impressed with the businesslike attitude of the locker room after the game last week, and the guys realized this win is just one step to getting things turned around. Playoffs are, of course, a pipe dream. They're not mathematically eliminated, but I think we can all agree it's not going to happen. That would require an extended winning streak by the Lions and a total collapse by the Edmonton Eskimos. But the key here is to end the season playing well and with confidence so that those that come back next year come back hungry and realizing that what this team can do.
Yeah, you know, these guys are, like we mentioned already, and we've been saying for the last few shows, you know, all they got left is to play for pride. Yeah. Play for pride and play for a job next season. And if that's what we got, then that's what we got. I mean, it shouldn't be surprising that they were a business-like attitude in the locker room after the game when you're 2-10.
Yeah.
Right? There shouldn't be a whole lot of celebrating going on.
Yeah. A few Lions notes before we get to our Red Blacks guests. Mike Riley left practice on Wednesday, but head coach Devon Claybrooks assured everyone this was a planned maintenance decision. Wednesday was a particularly wet day, and they may have had something to do with that as well, with Mike maybe still feeling lingering effects of that ankle injury he suffered a few weeks ago. But nice to see Claybrooks giving Riley a day off. I'm sure his body appreciated that.
Yeah, the last thing we need is for Mike to slip in some wet weather on a Wednesday and not be able to play on the weekend, because, you know, the light may be dim, but he's the light we have.
You talked about the top, about the Lions surveys that they sent out, and 15,000 and change took in last week's win. I believe that was the lowest attendance of the season. Not really surprising given the team's record and an East Division opponent in town, but I thought those that were there created a pretty fun atmosphere. And I have to say, Mojo, I'm a big fan of the addition of the MEI screaming Eagles marching band that's been added to the in-game experience. For me, high school bands and football just seem to go, college bands, you know, just seem to go hand in hand. And I thought it added some much needed football atmosphere. And I hope that continues. And I'd love to see them expand on that, much like the Blue Thunder drumline in Seattle at Seahawks games. For me, that's just part of the football experience. And those kids are doing a great job. And I think it really adds something to the atmosphere in BC Place versus, you know, the constant loud music that some people don't like.
Well, you know, I have to give it to the Lions, even though I've been crapping on them all over their surveys that they're sending me. But I have to admit, they are trying stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, that's all they can do. I mean, we talked about it in earlier episodes with, you know, the Nothing Rhymes with Orange campaign. They really put a lot of effort into their marketing this year. And unfortunately, the team's play has kind of swept all that under the rug and everybody's tuning it out. But, you know, it's not for a lack of trying. They had the right ideas and good marketing. And unfortunately, the season just hasn't panned out. But I think the atmosphere in the stadium has been better this year. And if we can just get a few more fans out to games, it'll be even better. So, but I think having a drum line and a college high school type marching band in the building is a great start.
If it had been the other way, Brian, and they were 10-2, that rhymes with orange, we'd be seeing it everywhere.
Yeah,
it'd be on T-shirts, it'd be on hats, it'd be on posters. Yeah. I mean, I know it was on posters in transit stations and stuff. Yeah. But I'm talking about it would be in posters in man caves and kids' bedrooms. Mm-hmm. That would have been everywhere.
Lions will once again be inviting girls between the ages of 5 and 15 to become junior felines at the October 5th game. They'll get a chance to go on the field with the felines and be cheerleaders for the night, and it's become a popular event over the years. If you would like your daughter to experience this, you can register at bclions.com/juniorfelines. And Mojo, again, good to get young girls involved in coming and watching football and getting that experience and building the fan base for the future.
Hey, Section 210 has our own feline on the squad this year. Well, she was actually made it last year, Jacqueline. I watched her basically growing up in Section 210. She was a junior feline. Now she's a feline. Now, no matter how craptastic the Lions are at any given point in a season, the felines are always top of their game.
All right, we couldn't put a show down last week, and I was planning to have both our guests on separate weeks of this back-to-back. Since we couldn't do that, we have both Michaela Schreider of the Mouchoir podcast and Rod Villa Gomez of the Wood Cookie Sawcast joining us for some Red Blacks discussion now, another two fine shows in the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Michaela and Rod, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the time tonight.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to this.
It's a big Lions Red Black CFPN pity party this week after both of you had me on your shows earlier this week, and now we get to have you on our show. The first thing I want to say is to both of you, you guys both put out great shows, and they've both been great additions to the CFPN, so congrats on that.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a great group to be a part of, and one of the things I love about the CFL is that in addition to fans supporting each other, I think that the media and podcast people certainly support each other. So it's really great to be a part of.
Yeah. I mean, it was a goal day one of actually having the show on the network. So the fact that I got to realize that this year, and you played a large part in that, guys. So thanks for accepting both of us into the group when, you know, it's a red, black, heavy CFPN now.
Michaela, we'll start with you. The Red Blacks took big hits when free agency hit, with the biggest departures being quarterback Trevor Harris, receivers Greg Ellington, running back William Powell, and Sir Vincent Rogers. The offensive coordinator Jamie Elizondo up and leaves just before training camp. Unlike in BC, where there was a lot of hype coming into the season before we get smacked in the face, Red Blacks fans had to have expected some sort of drop off. Did you think it would be this bad?
The honest truth is I don't really know what I expected. And I think a lot of fans were in the same boat in that, you know, like you mentioned, there were so many departures and very few quality replacements. Like as we saw Trevor Harris leave and Greg Ellington and William Powell, we saw them be replaced with players, with all due respect to those players, who weren't proven at this level. You know, they brought in Jonathan Jennings, but we all know about the struggles he had in BC, and Dominic Davis hadn't proved himself as a starter yet. So especially on offense, I don't think anybody really knew what to expect with this team. And then, yeah, Jamie Elizondo leaving really was, I think that was very unexpected on the part of the organization and obviously on part of the fans as well. So I think coming into the season, there was a lot of question marks. And I remember, I think 4 weeks in when the Red Blacks were 2-2, I remember saying, okay, this is kind of where I expected them to be. I don't think I expected the drop off that we saw after that. And I don't think anybody would have said that they certainly, you know, they expected this level of struggle this season. But at the same time, I can't say I'm overly surprised, because when you see a departure of that caliber on a team and you don't see the same caliber coming back in return, I mean, what do you expect aside from poor performance? And that's exactly what we've seen.
Rod, what were your thoughts heading into the season?
You know, a lot like Michaela and Janine, it's just we didn't know what to. The unknown was really what we were after in this whole thing, because we didn't know what to think. We knew last season, obviously, what we had, and then when you just lose everything, you don't know what kind of team you're going to see. And I think a lot of us didn't go in with any real hardcore expectations about what the outcome of the season was, because nobody wanted to either be let down. I think nobody wanted to be let down, really, in the end. So we all kind of kept our expectations low just so we could guard ourselves from feeling, because here we are this far into the season. And if any of us thought that the season was going to go well, we'd have all been ridiculously crushed. But I think a lot of us kept our expectations low, so that way we could say, yeah, okay. Just like Michaela said, you know, this is kind of where we thought we would be. We know this isn't going to be a Grey Cup season, but at least we're not, you know, 1-9, but well, we're not too far from that. So,
yeah. And I think it was kind of the exact opposite out here in BC, right? We signed Mike Riley, we signed Suk Chung, we've got Brian Burnham, they brought in Deron Carter, Brandon Rutley, John White. You know, all these guys were coming in, wow, we're going to have this great season. And it's just been such a letdown. So, kind of polar opposites the way that's gone for both of these teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rod, when you watch this team, what do you think the issues have been? Because to me, it all starts with the quarterback position in Ottawa, which, to put it nicely, has been unstable at best. But it's a team game. What other areas of the team are contributing to the poor results this season, in your view?
Or not contributing, for that matter. No, but what it all boils down to is this, is chemistry. And when you have a core like we talked about with Harris and Powell and Ellingson and Sinopoli and Spencer, and, you know, you could go on and on and on about what we had. And all of those guys, what they had was chemistry. What this team does not have this season is chemistry. And you can't really build it in practice. I mean, I know that the way the CFL works is that the practices are a lot lighter than game time. You have to forge it in the fire. And unfortunately, we just haven't seen any cohesiveness to forge that consistency and familiarity, if I can even say the word right. they can't do it. I can't say it, but, you know, they don't have that. They don't have that cohesiveness. They don't have that comfortability with each other yet. And it's not something that you can get, I think, in a couple of 4 or 5 games. It takes seasons of knowing each other and playing with each other. And you just don't see that type of fire in all of them that brings them together right now. And that's what they're missing. I think that's the hugest thing.
Michaela, what have you seen that's contributing to this team's problems this year?
Well, I think Rod's absolutely right in that this team is so disjointed, right? And it's almost hard to pinpoint one specific thing when you're watching them, because it's everything. Nothing is clicking. And I think if you could label one thing at fault for all of this, it starts at the top, right? And the offensive coordinating committee just isn't working. You know, you look at the disjointedness on the field. Well, that starts with the play calling. And if the people calling the plays are not in sync, if there's multiple different perspectives coming in, if there's too many cooks in the kitchen, which is exactly what we're seeing, you're going to get chaos on the field. And that's exactly what's happened. And I know that the Red Blacks, it's hard to say that they're at fault for that, because Jamie Elizondo left rather unexpectedly. And I think it was probably going to be next to impossible to replace him with a month left in training camp. I mean, there are people who get paid far more than I do to make those decisions, so I don't know. But it just it feels like this was something that it was like the rug just got ripped out from beneath the Red Blacks and they could never recover, because when you don't have stability at the top, it trickles down. And that's exactly what we're seeing with the offensive coordinating committee.
we all know how much confidence plays in life and in football. And it seems to me that Jonathan Jennings, I'm not going to spread it around. I'm bringing it right to the quarterback, because we saw this play out in BC. The man, it seems to us, has lost his confidence, right? How much is a lack of confidence playing in the offense this year? Rod, we'll start with you.
Well, I mean, exactly. Jonathan Jennings was a 5,000-yard quarterback just a couple seasons ago. And you wonder, you know what I love about, you know, Mikayla and Janin, and I think we've all talked about this, as far as when you are in your job as a civilian or as somebody who's not, you know, playing sports, you can lose confidence and maybe have one or two bad presentations and nobody knows. Right. Well, these guys, they have one or two bad games and the world knows. And so it's so much more amplified when it comes to the quarterback position, especially. So when you start to have bad games, it as much as you want to think that it doesn't wear on you, it wears on you. And I'm sure that these guys, when they get pummeled week after week after week, it chips down at their confidence to the core. Because, I mean, again, we suffer with confidence sometimes at our own job, and we're not doing this for a living. So, you know, I can only imagine what it feels like to put together so many losses. And so when a guy like Jennings, you know, he comes off of this hot season and just falls off the earth, that's got to play a lot into it. He wants to get back to where he was, but unfortunately, when you get buried by defeat and failure so much, sometimes it's hard, and a really strong person needs to pull themselves out of it. And I don't know. I mean, he's got to find that strength to pull himself out of it.
Mikayla, do you think he's going to find it? You think he's going to get it back? Because talking about confidence, he lost the confidence of the BC Lions fans. What is the thought out there in Ottawa?
I mean, personally, I would love to see him get it back. Jonathan Jennings is someone I've always had a soft spot for, and I know that saying that to BC Lions fans is going to sound ridiculous. But when he came to Ottawa, there was a part of me that really wanted to see him rebound and find whatever it was in 2016 that made him one of the best quarterbacks in the league that season. But you know, to Rod's point, confidence carries a lot of momentum, and that when you're playing well and you're developing confidence, you just grow and it builds and builds and builds, and it turns into better performance the more time goes on. But it works the other way too. And when you struggle, it is really hard to get out of that hole. And where I feel bad for Jonathan Jennings is that I don't think the quarterback problems that this team is having are all on him, because, you know, sub out Dominic Davis for Jonathan Jennings, or either, you know, or vice versa, and the same problems persist, right? Time, very, very, very ill-timed interceptions, inconsistency in play calling, an inability to read plays properly. No matter what, both of these quarterbacks have suffered from it. So is it just the fact that these are too inexperienced and maybe just not that good of quarterbacks, or is it something bigger? Is it the play calling? Is it the lack of protection from the offensive line? Is it the miscommunication with receivers? I feel like the problems on offense are so widespread, but unfortunately, Jonathan Jennings and Dominic Davis are wearing it, because when you're the quarterback, you wear the wins and you wear the losses.
Well, let's not just pile on the offense here. 361 points against. Rod, what are your thoughts on your defense's performance this year?
You know, it's hard to be a really good defense when your offense only stays on the field for two plays at a time. It really is. And that's been the absolute, you know, death of the Red Blacks at all this season, is the sheer amount of two and outs that we've had to endure because of the offense not clicking. And, you know, we had a very highly rated defense even coming into the season and the first few weeks of this season. But I got to tell you, you know, I know this is a marathon, not a sprint, but even marathon runners hit the wall at some point. And that's what this defense is doing. They're hitting the wall because they've had to be that unit that's kept this offense in games for so long. And unfortunately, it's just come to a point now late in the season that when all players get tired, especially now, this defense is getting even more tired because they've seen the field way more than I think any other defense has in this league. So you can't, I mean, again, these are all professional athletes, right? And they take their training very seriously. But you cannot anticipate coming into a season having the time of possession so far out of your favor that you're practically playing the whole season. So these guys, they're tired. And I feel bad for them because, you know, they probably want to get off the field more.
Michaela, who's been your defensive star so far this season?
Oof, that's Noel Thorpe would be my defensive star for his sideline celebrations alone. It's hard because no one has really stood out consistently. At the beginning of the season, there were a few players who I really liked, and then Jonathan Newsom was one of them, but now he's a member of the BC Lions, so that tells you how that went. So it's been hard to pinpoint one in particular. I do want to give credit to this defense in general because, like Rod said, they have been carrying the workload throughout this season, and now it's starting to show, right? Like, look at the number of injuries that the Red Blacks have on defense right now. Kevin Brown, Avery Williams, Antoine Pruneau, Jonathan Rose, Gerard Fernandez, Michael Clausen, Danny Mason. Like, the list goes on, and this is a result of the fact that they're playing 35 minutes a night on the field. And in terms of, you know, the points against, I mean, I don't know how many points of the 361 were the result of pick sixes, but I have to imagine with quarterbacks throwing interceptions as often as Jennings and Davis were, that certainly doesn't help, right? So the defense is starting to show wear and tear, whether it's in injuries or performance. And unfortunately, that's just the result of overuse.
Obviously, when a team has a season like this, like the Lions and Red Blacks are having, the knives come out from the fans and media. Usually, they are aimed at the GM and coach, and we've seen a lot of that out here in BC of late. Since you're closer to the pulse of the city, Michaela, what's the vibe there like in regards to Marcel Desjardins and Rick Campbell? From the outside, I think between the two of them, Desjardins holds the bigger responsibility for the fortunes of the team this year. Is either one in trouble?
I think it depends on who you ask, to be honest with you. Red Blacks fans can be quite divided on this, and there is a very large contingent of Red Blacks fans who are not happy at all with Marcel Desjardins' decisions, and who in some cases want to see him go. And I do think that's a bit of an extreme opinion. I think that it's very valid to question the decisions that were made in the offseason, and like I said, the lack of caliber players coming back for those who were lost. Every team has bad seasons, and this is exactly what's happening. I think that the temperature among fans has improved slightly over the last week. We talked about this on the podcast this week, but Coach Rick Campbell and General Manager Marcel Desjardins held a Q&A on Monday night with season ticket holders, where they literally just sat down and allowed fans to ask questions. And they were very open and honest about the, you know, goings on of the off season and what went behind their decisions. And I think that gave fans a little bit of a glimpse into, you know, what happens behind the scenes with this team and with other teams. And I think that helped fans maybe, I think fans appreciated the transparency of the organization, but make no mistake, there are a number of fans who are not happy at all with the fact that they had lost so many players, with the fact that really we haven't seen much in the way of action to fix the problems this year. So I think going forward, and in particular this upcoming offseason, is going to be really important for Marcel Desjardins.
Rod, what's your opinion? Anybody in trouble this year?
I don't think anybody's in absolute trouble. I think, again, like Michaela said, and really this was going to be a segment on mine too. I was going to react to the Q&A, but I had to take a step back because I listened to Michaela and Janine, and they did such a great job. I was like, I'm going to change first down. But I think they really did save themselves in the long run, because you're Michaela's right. A lot of fans this season were calling for everybody's head, and this is such a weird epidemic, and it's so weird in nowadays with fans just immediately crying for everybody's job when something goes wrong. And I think for the organization to get out in front of it, just like Michaela said, and for them to take accountability and say, listen, you know, things are not right, but we want to tell you that we have some sort of a plan. So just stay with us. I think that might have saved them for at least one more season, because I don't think anybody's got their pitchforks. If they were sharpened, then they might at least just be put away in the closet to get, you know, come back again. But I think they're safe for another season.
There's always some positives as well. Who are some of the players that have impressed this year? You know, maybe some guy that, you know, Lions fans may not realize. We don't see the Red Blacks out here that often as much as we see the Western team. So who's a guy that's kind of maybe somebody new to the team this year who's impressed and you're looking forward to seeing more of in the future?
If you hadn't have said new to the team, I would, my de facto answer to this is always Lewis Ward, because he's just ye old faithful.
Yeah, but we all know him. He's kicked like a million field goals in a row.
I know, I can't use him. A player who, and I will caveat this by saying it hasn't exactly been all that consistent, but a player who we have seen flashes of greatness from at times is wide receiver Dominic Rhymes. And in particular, when Dominic Davis was at the helm, we talked about the Dom-to-Dom connection. They had a few really nice connections, but even he and Jonathan Jennings connected a few times for some big long balls and even a pretty big touchdown. I believe it was against Saskatchewan. And while it hasn't always been consistent, I don't think you can necessarily blame that on Dominic Rhymes, because the quarterback position has been so fluid so far this year. He's been a player I've really enjoyed watching this year.
Yeah, he was injured for a bit, wasn't he, as well? Didn't he miss a couple of games due to injury?
He did at the very beginning of the season, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Rod, anybody who's impressed you this year that Lions fans should watch on Saturday?
Oh, yeah. So we lost a Deontay, but we got a Devontae. And Devontae Dedmon is just been one of these guys that's an eye opener this season. And unfortunately, a lot like Rhymes, you know, he did get hurt. Devontae did. But he has a great return, a kick return prowess, and just can flip field position like nobody's business. I would love, and I told him this when he was on my show, I'd love to see him get more catches, because he is a very lethal receiver as well. But for right now, I think what the Red Blacks really need is that jolt. You know, no offense to Stephon Logan, but Devontae Dedmon has got, you know, some young legs and he is quick. And so he's back off of injury this week, and hopefully we'll get to see him do a lot more than, you know, in the return game, because again, a good special teams and good field position goes a long way in helping offenses be able to score. So keep your eye on Devontae Dedmon.
He's pinball 2.0.
Amen.
So we all know it's tough to repeat back-to-back games. Rod, after last week's performance, what are the keys this week to rebound against BC at back in Ottawa?
Score more than 5 points. Let's start there. I mean, it sounds so cliche, but I got to tell you, it's just, they have to find a way. They literally have to find a way to find the end zone, because even in the days where Trevor Harris would lead us to the red zone and Ward would kick a field goal, we were at least getting to the red zone and scoring a field goal. At this point, we're barely even sniffing the red zone. So we need to be able to move the ball close enough to score some points. I mean, I'd almost just be happy with a couple of more field goals a game. But what really needs to happen is they need to put more of these in the end zone. So hopefully with Sinopoli back this week, hopefully with, you know, everybody, I don't want to say healthy, but, you know, with most of the folks back on the field this game, we'll be able to throw some more wrinkles at the Lions this week that they didn't see out of our absolute vanilla playbook from last week.
Michaela?
I'm going to say two things. One, the Red Blacks need to find a way to get at Mike Riley. And two, they need to protect their own quarterback, whoever that may be. shout out to my podcast partner, Janine, for digging up this. But before the game last week, no quarterback has been sacked more times than Mike Riley this season. And you guys know that. 45 times in total before the start of last week's game, but the Red Blacks didn't get to him once. And it, even if it's not a sack, they've got to put some pressure on Riley, who has been facing pressure all season. It blows my mind that they weren't able to put at least a little bit of pressure on him. And at the same time, Jonathan Jennings was sacked 4 times. So the Red Blacks need to protect their own quarterback, and they need to get a BC's quarterback.
Michaela, as I'm watching games across the CFL, it seems, and not only at BC Place, we only had 15,000 last game. Numbers look down across the league. At least from viewing it on TV. I don't know how busy concourses are, but it's got me a little bit worried about the health of the league. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about this so far this season, because I can really only speak to TD Place, because that's the stadium that I am in on the most consistent basis. And the rest, I do watch on TV. And I know that at TD Place, when you're looking at the south side, for example, the stands look a little emptier than I've seen in previous years, to be honest. But I know that a lot of the crowd sits in the concourse, because on the south side in particular, it's really set up so that you can stand anywhere and watch the game. So it's hard for me to tell how much of that is people not sitting in their seats and just watching elsewhere, and how much of that is people not buying tickets. I know from a Red Black standpoint, I think overall attendance is down slightly. And by that, I mean, instead of 24,000 a game, they're probably, I think on average from what I've seen, they're sitting at around 22,000, which is still pretty good. You know, this is the team's sixth season. I think the novelty of the CFL being back in Ottawa has worn off a little bit, and now it's just more consistent. And you know, speaking from Ottawa's perspective, this is unfortunately just a city that doesn't sell out hockey arenas or football stadiums, period. That is not something that we're going to do. So I think it's kind of leveled out to what we're going to expect here in Ottawa. But in terms of across the CFL, I mean, it's hard to say, and I don't have numbers in front of me, so it's hard to say, you know, they're down by this or it's this much of a problem, but it is something that people are noticing, and it's something that people are talking about. And in terms of reasoning, I mean, the competition is only getting higher for you know, disposable income. There's more and more sports teams popping up of you know, a lot of soccer teams popping up in different cities, and there's always going to be somewhere that's going to distract fans from spending their money there. And of course, now we've got an entire new football league being created in the state. So if attendance is a problem for the CFL, it is going to be something they're going to want to look at soon before they have even more competition south of the border.
Now, Rod, I'm always intrigued when somebody in the United States falls in love with our league in Canada, especially with the NFL machine south of the border. What attracted you to Canadian football? And secondly, living in California, what's up with the Red Blacks fandom, man? You should be a West Coast guy. What's going on there?
Well, I tell you what, the CFL, I pretty much immediately fell in love with it, because the NFL, like you said, it's a machine. They just spit out and they chew up and they spit out fans, players, and whatever else. It's just not, it's not conducive, in my opinion, to a fan experience. And when I started to interact with the CFL, and from day one, I mean, look, and I've told the story on the podcast, but I don't want to make it that long. When I first tweeted at the Red Blacks, right? And I get it. I know that it's not the actual team that's tweeting me back. It's probably an intern or an employee that runs the Twitter account. But I tweeted that I was going to be a Red Blacks fan. And a couple hours later, I got a retweet. I got, you know, a high five from the team. And then it was just sort of like this validation to me. And then all of our nation just sort of, you know, just embraced me as a fan, and I just immediately felt attached to the team. And then by proxy, because the great thing about the CFL too is that I can watch every single game, and I do. I've missed one game in four seasons. Well, maybe two games in four seasons because of the way the ESPN package works. So I've got to watch all the games. I don't get to watch every NFL game. And it's not, you know, it to me, when I know what's going on in the league and I can pinpoint exactly what play someone's talking about, I get way more invested in the game itself than I do if I'm watching highlights on SportsCenter that night, you know, at a game that happened in Kansas City or a game that happened in Baltimore or whatever, because I don't know what happened there and I can't watch it because of territorial, you know, whatever. So I love the inclusiveness. And then I also love the approachability of everybody in the CFL, players, front office, media, everybody just loves each other so much that they just say, hey, we want to talk football with you. And I've never run into a problem. Why I'm a Red Blacks fan is because when I first chose to be a fan of the CFL, the Red Blacks were in their second year of existence, and so, or third year of existence. And I figured, I'm a new fan. This is a relatively new team. I'm going to attach myself to this team and we'll go from there. And they won the Grey Cup that year. And that was it. I was a fan for life now.
Good stuff. All right, it's prediction time, and I don't need a score, but though you can throw one out there if you care to. Michaela, we'll start with you. Who wins this week and why?
Oof. This is, man, this is like choosing between, it's like, can they both lose? Is that possible? Because I feel like that's very likely.
Might be able to find a way to do that. I'm not sure.
I feel like if two teams in the CFL were going to find a way to simultaneously lose a game, I think it'd be these two. Maybe I'm going to sound like a pessimist here, but I just don't see the, unless they drastically change the way that they have been playing, I don't see the Red Blacks getting out of this one with a win. Like I said, they've got to make some serious changes in the way that they approach going after Mike Riley, and I just don't know that I see it happening with the number of injuries they're dealing with. I think I'm going to have to give this one to the Lions, but it hurts me.
Rod?
Yeah, it's going to be an ugly win, but I actually think that the Red Blacks are going to pull this off only because we have seen time and time again that these back-to-back games, it's hard. It's very difficult for a team to win both of the back-to-backs. And for some reason, it's just, I don't know if it's mental or whatever, but the team that lost the week before usually comes back and is able to pull it through. And so I don't know how, and I'm not even going to try to prognosticate on how they do it, but I think the Red Blacks in a very, very ugly game will very much be able to pull out the victory this time, only because statistically speaking, it's hard for a team to win back to back.
Mojo?
Oh, man. I got to think, I got to think the Lions are going to pull this out. With only two wins this season, I don't think they can afford to sit back and go, we're coming off a victory. So I think, and let's face it, I think the offensive line, our offensive line got embarrassed that their coach got fired. And I think they're playing with renewed fire. And I think that's going to be enough to spark the Lions to a rare back-to-back win.
Yeah, I got to go with the Lions as well, just simply because of the quarterback situation. And I think Mike Riley had a great game last week. And hopefully the offensive line can give them that protection again. And I think they will. So, you're on your own, Rod.
That's okay. I'll be this week, and I'll be happy.
Well, thanks again, guys. And Michaela, I look forward to meeting you in Calgary during Grey Cup week. Rod, will you be joining the fun as well?
Unfortunately, I wanted to. I can't make it work this year, but definitely saving up for next year in, what is it? Saskatchewan, right? No. Yeah, Regina.
All right. Well, before we let you go, both of you can just quickly let people know where they can listen to your shows as well.
Yeah, for sure. You can find Mouchoir Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all that stuff. And you can find us on Twitter at Mouchoir Podcast.
Yep. And for us too, the Wood Cookie Sawcast, you can find it wherever you found this one. Just search it up when you're done listening. And it's the Wood Cookie Sawcast, and find us on Twitter at Wood Cookie Cast.
All right. Thanks, guys. This is great. Really enjoyed it. And we'll look forward to doing it again in the future.
Absolutely. Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Mojo, great to chat with Michaela and Rod. I would encourage our listeners to check out both the Mouchoir Podcast and the Wood Cookie Sawcast ahead of this week's rematch against the Lions, and you'll hear yours truly on both of those episodes this week. It's going to be a tough game, I think, playing in Ottawa in the second half of a back-to-back, which is always a challenge. Both teams will make some adjustments. The Red Blacks are getting a few pieces back to their lineup, and Brad Sinopoli and Devontae Dedmon and Avery Williams. Lions will be looking to get back-to-back wins for the first time this season and finish the season strong. Keys to the game for me, keep Mike clean again. Simple pressure, a very unstable quarterbacking situation in Ottawa, and I think the Lions have a great shot to get another win. But from Ottawa's view, they took it on the chin pretty good last week, and I'm sure they're looking for a chance to rebound at home. So the Lions better be ready, because I'm sure they see this as a winnable home game for them.
Well, Brian, as we all know, man, it all going to stem from the offensive line and the defensive line. Those two units take care of business. The rest of the team will do the same. And I'm looking forward to two wins in a row.
That's it for episode 141. And I want to thank our guests, Michaela Schreider and Rod Villagomez, for joining us tonight. Thanks to our sponsor, Metal Rocks. Make sure to visit bclionsden.ca, click the link to their site, and see all the awesome handcrafted jewelry they have to offer. This show is part of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Make sure to check out all the great shows that are part of it at cfpodnetwork.ca and follow the network on Twitter at cfpodnetwork. Please subscribe and listen to the show on your favorite podcast app. Visit us at bclionsden.ca. Follow us on Twitter at bclionsden and at mojocamp. And on Instagram at bclionsden_podcast. And that's podcast, PAWDCAST. Till next week, I'm Brian Warish. And on behalf of Mojo Camp, enjoy the games this weekend. And as always, roar, you Lions, roar.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.